This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 497, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 497. In my head, at that point, I always hear Beetlejuice saying, and it keeps getting funnier every single time I say it. I am Josh Flanagan, not Michael Keaton. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
Also not Michael Keaton.
No, I'm not. As much as I wish I was, I am not.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I've read a great... Anyway, we are iFanboy. We all... See that? I pulled that tangent back from the edge. Hey, Connor's not here.
Connor is not here. Yes. This is the first time you and I have ever done a show together.
Have you done a two-man show?
I don't want to brag, but no. I feel like at some point, I don't think the Pick of the Week show I've ever done a two-man show,
because yeah.
But we've done two-man, like, explodes and stuff like that, movie stuff, whatever. So I don't know, but I don't think you and I have ever just talked comics for an hour just amongst ourselves.
Well, I guess we're going to listen. Yeah. I don't want you to worry because I do have some experience with this format.
Oh, whew.
Okay, so there we go. So we're iFanboy. We like comic books, both of us. Connor's in Germany. That's not a joke. I can't do a joke better than that. Connor's in Germany at a game convention.
Yep.
It's like a very orderly San Diego, apparently.
With much more beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or just Bier, which is German for beer.
Hello.
Beautiful language.
Hello.
Every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book. Sometimes it's every single book of that series. And we call that the Pick of the Week, and we'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some other stuff. Maybe some mail. We're going to have a good time. But there will be spoilers, so that's your warning. It's a review show. We're going to talk about what's in them. You know that. So, Ron, let's go again.
I wouldn't have done it if it didn't deserve it.
I actually don't think that Airboy 1 was Pick of the Week, now that I...
It was, I think.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
so it's all three issues.
So Pick of the Week this week is Airboy number 3, and it is so far all three issues have been Pick of the Week. And the thing about it is that this is a really special series for several reasons. One is that just the absurdity of the content itself, right? Just
yes.
the meta textual. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, that's one piece of it. The other piece is that I really feel like it's Greg Hinkle's kind of introduction to the world. You know, even though he's done some other, he kickstarted a graphic novel that he drew, and he's done some other stuff. But like, this is his, you know, people are seeing what Greg Hinkle is capable of, and it's pretty damn good.
It's a lot.
Yeah. But then the last piece of it is that I just need to applaud James Robinson for probably taking the biggest risk in comics that I've read in years and being just brutally honest and personal with this. Mm-hmm. And it's the juxtaposition of the absurdity of the series tied in with the honesty and the you know, and just the realness of his own writing himself into the story. And then the fact that this is the only book that made me laugh out loud, like literally laughed out loud. Mm-hmm. And it just when I got down to it, I was just like, there was a couple of contenders, and we'll get to the other contenders. But I was just like, I can't not pick this because I can't think of anything that has made me think the way this series has made me think so far.
I agree with all of the things that you've said. Yeah. I can't the swing from really stupid.
Yep.
To wow, you are saying that out loud.
Yep.
About a real thing. I mean, it's funny because I think we talk about this, like Rick Remender's work. We talk about that with his work. But there is a layer of metaphor in there with something like, say, Deadly Class, which we're going to talk about. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We're still like, oh, this is very honest. And he writes in the back how honest it is. But this is a step further because it's him saying the thing about him that is true. And then there's also, like, the guy shits himself, there's a huge penis, there's, like, it goes all over the place, and for some reason it works, is my point.
Well, and I think that was, the swing is what got me. So, like, in the middle of the book, you have a, so for those who aren't reading this book or following along at home, long story short, James Robinson, Greg Hinkle, writer, artist, have written a comic about them getting an assignment to do an Airboy comic, which is an old character from the 40s who's in the public domain, and they take a bunch of drugs, and Airboy comes to life, and they hang out with him in San Francisco in the unfortunate adventures of issue number 2. And then issue number 3 picks up where Airboy takes them to his dimension, to his world, and now they're in the middle of World War II in the 1940s, and they meet Airboy's, you know, team and of like superhero, like kind of invaders-esque characters, you know. And in the middle of it, James is drawn in their base. They have a morgue, and James Robinson is drawn there, and they pull out a body in the morgue, and turns out it's a soldier who is. James, like, he's looking at himself dead. I don't know why that dimension's James Robinson was alive in the 40s, but
that's not the point.
Yeah, that's not the point.
I'm going to push past that because I thought that and I thought, stop thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's looking at his dead body and finds the picture of that dimension's James Robinson's sweetheart, who happens to be the same woman that he was married to in our continuity, in our world. And you get this, like, unbelievably honest and just gut-wrenching, you know, kind of talk from James about it, lamenting his mistakes and losing his wife and all this sort of stuff. And it was just really heavy, really tear-jerking kind of stuff. And then you turn the page and Greg is naked having sex with Airboy's girlfriend.
It wasn't until that point that I realized the color shift that had happened.
Oh, the color shift's genius. Yeah,
It had been there, but I hadn't noticed it. So in the sort of first two issues in our world, quote unquote, everything was sort of this monotone. It was a sort of blue white, blue green white sort of thing.
Yep.
But when they get to Airboy's world, everything's in color. In the other book, Airboy was in color, but in this, I remembered that they'd stayed that sort of monotone.
Yeah, I mean, like, our world was dirty and monotone and whatever, and Airboy was bright and primary color. And now in his world, Airboy and all his other compatriots are all colorful, but Greg and James stayed that kind of that bluish hue, you know, that blue green hue. But I turn the page, and I mean, like, talk about a great page turn. I mean, it's like Airboy and James walk into the locker room, and Airboy just goes, "Good God in heaven!" And James goes, "Oh fuck!" And you turn the page, and it's just a shot of them having sex, and that was the point where I laughed out loud, and I did the Seinfeld arms in the air, like, "Nope, this is it. I got to pick this."
Yeah.
I mean, it was just great. So
yeah, I mean. I feel like I've said all the things that there are to say about it, and, and we're going to keep going over it, but it really is something special. And you know, the you're seeing a lot of their these two guys' talents. Not that part. on display here, where like James Robinson is, he's at his best when he's just being as open and honest as possible. And you know, you can see him do this on social media as well, but not even to this extent, I don't think.
Sounds like he's off again.
Yeah, well, he comes on and off, but like I've seen things like my.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky enough to know James Robinson personally. I mean, past couple of years he's been here in San Francisco where I am, and I've hung out with him, and we've interviewed him, but we've hung out with him socially, and he is truly unique, and he is writing like it carries over into the book. Like there's not, and that's what I find so amazing is that there's not much being held back with this book. It's that honesty that you just don't get in comics anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
like
I think that I don't actually know him. I've only shared some awkward on camera interviews.
When
I say awkward, I mean they're literally my most awkward interviews I've ever done.
But great television.
Absolutely, and I really like his work. But I think one of the things, in a bigger sense, one of the things that he's getting to here is that he felt, and I know that others have agreed, that you know his work over the past however many years since his return to comics, I guess, has been lacking to some degree.
Yep.
And I think there's definitely been really good stuff in there. I think there's been stuff that was disappointing. There's stuff that I read all the way through, and there's stuff that I didn't really bother with. It's been all over the place, really. Definitely hints of what it was that a lot of us fell in love with the Golden Age or with Starman or things like that. But this is just like, okay, if that's what you really want, like, here you go. Look, here's my veins. I mean, like, and it totally works.
Yeah. And this issue even had that too. We're talking about his thoughts about his career and what he does and all that sort of stuff. And by the way, I just want to highlight the one page of them climbing into the building was great. Mm-hmm. The follow me page where they're following Airboy. That was fantastic page work by Greg Hinkle. I mean, in terms of storytelling. I mean,
oh, yeah, totally.
You know, like that was amazing.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be completely honest about the thing that impressed me.
Yep.
On the second to last page, the one after the fucking page.
Yep.
When Airboy punches Greg.
Yep.
And he goes backwards. And the way that he made his gigantic penis flop, I was like, that's a good drawing.
Yep.
Say what you will. I mean, and then they reprinted that page.
Yeah, exactly.
It,
yeah.
That panel. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? If you're going to draw a giant penis in mid-fall, That's really good. I couldn't help but notice. How could you not notice?
Right.
It's a damn fine book.
Yeah, it's just so good.
And it feels like nothing else going on right now.
With the exception of like what Fingerman's doing with minimum wage, I can't think of anything that's honest that is honest as this.
Yeah, it is close to that.
You know, like oh man, and it's just so absurd. It's just so absurd and ridiculous.
I didn't put that on this week because he went and he did a whole dream sequence issue, and I can't.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as I was worried about, but
yeah. But
I just hate dream sequences.
Yeah. Oh, God, amazing. Anyway, yeah, so Airboy number 3. Will number 4 get pick of the week? Will it happen? Will we get the first time an entire series gets pick of the week? Time will tell.
Is it a 4 issues? Is it a
bond? It's a 4 issue miniseries.
Okay, good.
I think that's just right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think you want it.
But that said, so it ends on the cliffhanger of that now James and Airboy's making James and Greg fight the Nazis. And so I want to see what happens, you know? Like, I want to see how they resolve it, so it should be interesting. But up to the point of reading Airboy number 3, The Wicked and the Divine number 13 was real close to getting pick of the week. Like super close. You're not reading this, are you?
No, I am. I've been reading it all along. I should point, and I'll be honest about this, as I always have been, no idea what is going on most of the time. Mostly because, and I get the broad strokes. I'm not totally lost. But I don't think that I understand what the analogs are supposed to be. So people have like sent me the links, and I don't know who the people are.
Yeah.
You know, Kanye West. I was like, I know who Kanye West is.
Unless you have a degree in theology, it's interesting in that, like, in Kieran, in the idea of mapping gods to pop stars, you know, Kieran's not limiting himself to just the Western notions of gods, you know, like,
sure.
And which I thought was really interesting because that was explored in this issue.
I'm sorry. I would like to just clarify. I'm not lost on the gods part. It's the pop stars I don't know.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
No, no. The gods I'm fine with.
Oh, but I'm not really. I mean, I haven't even paid any attention to who the pop stars are supposed to be. I just assumed, like, the Kanye one, whatever. Like, that's, you know, that's.
I don't know which one that is.
Well, anyway, we'll talk about.
You don't either, cause you don't know the names
exactly.
But there's a lot of characters.
There's a lot of characters, yeah. But I don't necessarily believe that the pop stars are meant to be real pop stars in our world. I think that's just a. And I'll I'll ask Kieran about that. But
I think it's helpful. But yeah. I think the point is, like, there's a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And I have some trouble. And the one character who I had a hold on.
Yeah.
The anchor for the series, she's gone now.
Yeah.
So and I guess you pointed this issue was I don't want to say fill in, but it was not.
Well,
Jamie.
The entire arc is all fill in artists while Jamie goes and draws Phonogram.
Right.
And so they've been changing the artist per. They have a different artist each issue, and this issue featured Tula Lute, who did.
Oh, okay, that's I know she is.
Yeah, who did Supreme Blue Rose, and she's a superstar. And that's really what almost made this pick of the week was that not of course I love Jamie's art and Wicked and Divine's been fantastic and whatever but Tula Lute's art on this just blew me away. I mean it was such a showcase of her talent and ability as an artist. And if you didn't read Supreme Blue Rose, hopefully after this you pick it up and go back and check it out because I just think she's immensely talented.
What I did like about this, I like the art just fine. This was actually one of those. This is actually one of the easier sort of issues to follow along with. I got this one. It was actually pretty simple, and I don't know the way that it was. You know, there were like big panels, not a ton on every page. It was fairly easy to digest, I guess. Like it sort of was like big concepts as opposed to a lot of subtlety,
yeah.
Which I think made it easier to digest than some of the other stuff, which tends to sometimes be a little like you feel like you're missing something,
right?
I think so that was good. I liked it.
Cool. Yeah, it's for those not reading it or if you care or whatever, but one of the pop stars, Tara, basically kills herself, and then you've got the whole social media kind of, you know, the public, you know, or she doesn't kill herself, but she dies. I'm sorry.
Well, and it focused on.
Yeah.
It focused on, like, the fact that she really didn't want to be that and how, like, she'd had a hard time before she was a god.
Yeah.
But then it showed, like some of the social media backlash that she had to deal with. Like, people just saying horrible things about her all the time, which we've all seen and hopefully have not propagated, but I'm sure you have in some sense.
Yeah.
It was really interesting about sort of what it means to be a celebrity now, especially if you're not like a super high level celebrity, I guess.
Right.
Like just a guy. If you're just say that you're a comic book writer, just doing your work, you know, and you have to deal with tons of anonymous people saying horrible things about what you do.
Yep. And trying to be a good person, but really wrestling with who are you, you know, like this idea of identity and all that sort of stuff. I think this is a really like it's a nuanced thing that is hard for people to understand, hard for people to relate to be honest, you know, because a lot of people, especially and I think that's kind of what Kieran is exploring in this kind of thing, is that there are people who achieve fame in our society. And the people who are assigning that fame are creating notions in their head about who those people are, whether they are them or not.
Mm.
And I think that's a really interesting concept. And that's a really, you know, and like, and then forgetting the fact that these are people too, you know, I mean, like, you know, it's funny because not to whatever, away from comics, but to baseball. But last week there's a hubbub because one of the players on the Mets almost got traded. And while the trade was happening, he was playing in the game and he found out that he might be traded. And he's a 23-year-old kid who's been in the Mets organization since he was 15. And he like broke down and started crying.
Oh,
because
wow.
He didn't want to leave the team. Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It was awful. Like it was just like, and so he's there on the field rubbing his eyes and like, and you know, and this whole thing. And it was
New Yorkers are sensitive to that kind.
Oh,
of
Oh yeah,
thing,
no.
Right?
Now everybody loves him, and like, and because what it was really really awkward. The trade was being discussed on social media during the game, but it wasn't official. So normally when a trade happens, they'll pull the player out of the game. But because it didn't get signed, sealed, delivered, and locked down, they never told the dugout to pull him. So the manager didn't know and left him in. Someone in the stands yelled to him, said, "Hey, good luck in Milwaukee." And that's how he found out. And so now he's playing the game, and then he goes out to bat, and the whole stadium gives him a standing ovation because they think they're saying goodbye to him. And he hasn't been told he's being traded, and he's sitting there, and he doesn't want to leave. Like, the Mets are, they're like fighting for first place. It's New York. Like, he would have been traded to Milwaukee, who are not in the playoff hunt and not a very good team, and in Wisconsin, right?
Well, that's awkward.
Yeah, exactly. And so he starts tearing up, and everybody sees it. And the lesson that came out of it is just that, you know, yeah, we put these people up on pedestals, but they're just people. Like, we're all the people. We all have emotions, and we all have, you know, and you assign this weight of fame on people, and it's hard. I mean, I know it's like, oh, poor, you know, poor famous people are having to deal with, you know,
fuck that though.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's tough. It's tough. So I like the humanizing of it. Yeah. So there you go.
They should have moneyballed that. Send Brad Pitt in there.
Well, the trade ended up not happening, and now he's still on the team.
That's awkward.
Yeah. It was great. It's fantastic because then the next game he played, he hit the home run to win the game, and everybody went crazy. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean,
he's got to keep that up, though.
Well, yeah. It's been
set a precedent.
Yeah. Anyway, so Wicked and Divine number 13 was really, really good. Really, really good. So
I was very surprised that you had Midnighter number 3 on here. And here, not because of you, but because I had, for some reason, throughout the week, I had seen various people talking about this Midnighter series that I did not read because I did not care about reading it, and I did not know the people who were doing it.
Yep.
But I decided I literally, like, it was like a groundswell. So I was like, I should check this out.
Yeah.
That this there's sort of one and done issues also, so you could sort of easily pick up number 3. How did you come upon this?
Exactly the same way as you. I'm familiar with the writer Steve Rolando because he did Undertow at Image, which was a great series, that underwater pulpy kind of story. But I just been hearing people talking about it. You know,
and
like
you
saying,
decided this week was the week you were going to start?
Exactly.
Look at that. That's kismet right there.
It is kismet. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good.
My father-in-law responds to questions about what he thought about food. How was the restaurant?
It was pretty good. Pretty good. I enjoyed the art. I thought the art was very good. I thought it told a self-contained story. I mean, it's Midnighter. It felt right. You know, I got the sense there's something else going on that I don't quite understand. Maybe I should go read the other first two issues. But it was good.
I have various thoughts on it. Okay. One is that I think it was very well done and it was interesting.
Okay.
I think that it did a lot to capture the idea of Midnighter as a gay man in a relationship.
Yep.
As opposed to just going, there's the thing. You know, that's the best I'd ever read besides that. I've always liked that them as a couple, but Garth Ennis in the Kev books actually spent a lot of time on Midnighter. He was a big part of that book, and this felt like it was as detailed, but not quite the same take on him, I think. But they weren't shying away from who he is and what that meant. Like, he was even at a club at one point, and I was like, "Is that okay?" But so I liked it a lot, and I definitely see a lot of craft and stuff going on. He's a great character, by the way.
Yeah, he's a fun
superhero character.
Yep.
It's like he's like the Punisher, but way more interesting to me.
Yep. I could see that.
That being said, I don't think that I loved it. Like it was really good, but I'm like, I'm not sure how much I'm actually enjoying this. I'm gonna read a couple more. I'm probably go back and read 1 and 2 again.
Yep.
And maybe that will tie it all together because, you know, I did start at number 3.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no, I thought the praise was deserved. It wasn't, you know, it's not Watchmen, but it's definitely, I'm going to read the next issue. I'm going to go back and read the first two. And just because I like the character and it's not a bad version of the character. Let's put it that
way.
You
know what? DC is, they're turning a corner.
There are parts of it that are, yeah.
Well, I mean, but more all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
For a little while, it was like, there's these three books you should read and otherwise just go away. And now there definitely are little bits here and there which are at least getting interesting. You know, whereas before, like, their crime was just being boring.
Yeah.
I think that, is it ACO? I don't know how to pronounce that name. Acho? I don't know. The artist is three letters, ACO.
I don't know what the name is, but...
Yeah. I think it is a case of, I think that the layouts are very interesting, but it's trying a little too hard. I think it's a little more complicated than it needs to be, which sometimes is like trying to be impressive. I gravitate toward much simpler storytelling with my panel layouts.
Right.
My preference of panel layouts. I am not an artist.
disclaimer, you are not.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not a comic book artist, but you know, like, it's pretty interesting. It reminds me of oh gosh, what's his name? The guy who did Green Arrow with Jeff Lemire for such a long time.
Andrea Sorrentino.
Maybe
something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, it's a little like that in terms of layout, I think. Whereas very, very detailed, very well thought out, and everything, but maybe just a bit much.
Right.
Anyway.
All right. Cool.
Darth Vader.
I didn't include Darth Vader on my picks, but you added it because I thought maybe we were overdoing it on the Star Wars. That was my worry.
I figured that with you and me.
Yeah.
Because Connor's out.
Yeah, Connor's out. Although I feel like our interest is getting him curious.
Oh, it has to be.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this book.
Yeah.
Like, on the one hand, we're talking about Darth Vader number 8 by Kieran Gillen, and oddly enough, the book that Salvador La Roca was born to draw.
Yeah.
Like, all of the things that I didn't like about him and everything else he's ever drawn, with this, I'm like, yeah, that works. That totally works.
Yeah.
It's just the strangest book.
It's very odd, because it's not really, I mean, at this point now, the book's almost not about Vader.
Well, I mean, he's at the middle. He kind of shows up.
Yeah.
And all the things revolve around him, but we're really spending a lot of time with his, like, little cadre of the girl and the two killer droids and now the Wookiee.
Right.
I'm a sucker for the fact that we're going to go back and like, he's going to have to, like, go head to head with Tag.
Yeah, which I love.
I do. I cannot. Yep.
I also love, like, so the whole the majority of this book was, so his new, I don't know who, I don't even know what her name is, but Vader's little, not lackey, but employee.
Spunky lady.
Spunky lady. She's leading a team of bounty hunters to do a heist, to steal a shit ton of credits from the Imperials. And as I was reading it, there were the box. So they pull off the heist, and there are the boxes of the credits, and they're like these little
ingots. You
know, whatever. And for a moment, I was like, "What is this? That doesn't." But then I realized that when Han was leaving Yavin,
boxes of them.
That was his reward, right?
That was it. That's what he wanted. That's what he shall get.
Yep.
It was. I mean, there was a heist.
Yep.
She's kind of interesting. She's like the most non-Star Wars-y character.
Yeah.
Because she's sort of like, she's neither good or bad. She's sort of like likes to go with the chaos of everything. Super capable. You know, the droids are kind of a joke, but it's kind of funny still, so I'm fine with it. I don't know. I think one of the reasons that this book doesn't bother me is that I don't feel like this is stuff that we shouldn't be covering.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like I'm okay with, like, a lot of the stuff in Jason Aaron's Star Wars book, I'm like, I don't feel like we should be doing this here.
Right.
But with this one, I feel like, all right, that's fine. Let's go with this.
Yeah.
Admiral Tanoth shows up, so that's awesome. It's Inspector. Was he at the table?
I don't think so.
Oh, was he?
No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Inspector Tanoth.
No, he was not at the table, I don't believe.
I like deep Imperial.
Yeah. Oh, well, hey, you know me about Imperial facial hair.
I know.
Yeah. It's all good. So
I was checking in, like, I'm still reading it, and I get to the end of it, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I think I enjoyed that.
I mean, honestly, I said it when they came out, you know, I enjoyed Jason Aaron's Star Wars. I thought it was really good, but I said the sleeper hit or the steal of the show was Vader from out of the gate, and it continues to be.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good job, Kieran Gillen.
Well, look at you getting all the accolades this week.
So you like Deadly Class number 15?
Yeah, I liked it fine.
Yeah.
This is I'll be honest, this is not my favorite book that Rick does.
Yeah.
It's real good, but I have a hard time relating to it because it's pretty depressing and anarchic.
Yeah.
Because I don't see know that. Who to
root it's
for.
Very nihilistic.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm kind of like, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. It can be.
It's super soap opera-y. You know, he's just sad and self-destructive and doing drugs all the time. And I have a hard time latching onto that.
Right.
That being said, I like that it exists and that people like, just to read the letters, you're like, oh, this is touching some people a lot. It's just not my experience. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. Fine. And the thing is that it's impossible to not marvel at Wes Craig.
Absolutely.
On a weekly basis.
Joined this week by new regular colorist Jordan Boyd.
Yeah, yeah.
A former collaborator of mine, yep. who has risen through the ranks and is on a bunch of stuff now. So, great colorist.
Yeah. I feel like this book is important for several reasons. And I know you said that it's not, it's not up your alley and it's not the sort of thing. And I think that what Wes Craig is doing on it is important and good. But I also think that the voice that what Rick is doing with the book is important as well.
Listen, it's 15 issues later. I've felt like this since the beginning. I'm still reading it.
Right. Yeah, so exactly. And we're close, and he's close to wrapping up. I think this is the second to last issue of the first major arc of the big first chunk of the story. And it seems that's what he's doing with this book and Black Science is like the first 16 issues of the first three or four trades are the ones that, are that first chapter almost.
Yeah.
What I just find interesting about it is just that the premise is ridiculous, is the school for assassins and all that sort of thing. But the way it's handling emotions and the way it's handling the aggression and paranoia and all the things that come with being in high school, I think are, really make it well. And then finally, Wes Craig, like the drug sequence when they're taking mushrooms, like that page. Where with the cartoony guy running away from Reagan as an astronaut and stuff like that, like it's little bits like that and like the little punch out they're playing Mike Tyson's yep. punch out, little bits like that just make me show that Wes Craig has got this great range and it's this is comic book magic. That's why I like it. That's why I want to talk about it because it just I don't know. I like it.
I like how there are no panel borders.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in a Brian Hitch way.
No, not like that.
Yeah, yeah. So
no, I think this the cover on this one is fantastic.
Oh yeah, the covers have always been. I mean, everything about it, the double page, the title spreads, the photos being taken during the basketball game, like little things like that, just little subtle touches that I feel like people might take for granted are the things that I absolutely marvel at. So mm-hmm. Yeah, the two page drug sequence was fantastic. And you know me, I'm not a drug person. So
yeah, I don't know that I can. I mean, I can say yeah. I see you're saying that looks good. I'm just like, yeah. Oh God, when is this over? Good, it's only one more page.
Yeah,
I hate hallucination and dream sequences. That's my thing.
Yeah,
I'm not going to apologize for it either.
All right, so is Ultimate End number 4 the last issue?
I don't know. You know who needs to apologize?
Who?
The people who made this book.
That's what I've heard.
So, oh, you don't read it?
No, I don't. No,
oh, God,
no.
It's horrible.
I parted ways with the Ultimate Universe a long time ago. They lost me a long time ago.
Because it's the end and you were there at the beginning for so long, it's horrible.
Yeah.
So for three issues, there's been this thing going on that for some reason, in Manhattan, supposedly in Miles Morales' world, where everybody's come together from the 616 universe. I just hate that I'm even saying that now. but it's easier. And having I'm not sure what's going on, but basically there's this struggle where the two Tony Starks have gotten together and they're trying to fix things and everybody else is going after them. And it's going to be that the ultimate people versus the regular people. And it seemed to have no connection to Battle World. And then all of a sudden, in the last third of this book, we cut to Doom and they're like, there's problem in the Manhattan area. And I was like, oh, come on.
Yep.
This does not feel like it was ever supposed to be part of this. He just didn't know what it was. Like, he wrote it earlier and didn't know that, we were going to have to deal with Doomstadt. And everybody in the book itself starts referring to God Doom, just like they do in the other books. And it's from out of nowhere. So before, where it didn't make sense, it was like, well, wait, isn't this part of Battle World where, now they've tried to make it make sense and it's even worse.
Great.
But I don't know that I asked for that. I may have asked for that. So it might be my own fault.
Look at you making yourself blaming the victim.
We followed these books for so this week was the last week of The Daily Show, right? And The Daily Show with Jon Stewart started in 1999, the year that we graduated college, and it just occurred to me that that's my entire adult life basically. this book is exactly the same.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
And so to watch it, to the work that Brian Bendis and his various excellent artists did on this.
Right.
And mostly him, to be honest. I don't feel a lot of affection for a lot of the other stuff. But to watch it sort of peter out like this, it's just so
sad. It's really sad.
It's disappointing.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I kind of feel it, because this was that book was a big deal.
Yep.
You know, it was really good to read Spider-Man for years, and you know, Bendis did some great work, and we met a lot of great. You know, I don't love Bagley all that much these days, but we, you know, he did his part, and those were good issues. And then, you know, there were a lot of great artists who came up through there, David Marquez and
La Fuente, Eminem. Yep.
And yeah. Sarah
Michelli, yep.
Sarah Michelli, exactly. And like, you know, now Bagley came back for this sort of quote story.
Yep.
And like at the end there's literally like a 2-page spread of all of the heroes of each universe on either side, and they're going at each other, and is my least favorite kind of comic book 2-page spread. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where they kind of look like they're stacked up on bleachers. Like, so half of them are like stand in that pose where they have both arms. We took a picture like that at the con once. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, just spatially. I don't like it. So it's not even like it's the worst comic. It's just kind of a bummer.
Right.
And that's why I keep talking about it, because I'm trying to work out my feelings on it.
That's all right. You'll be okay.
All right.
Every issue. That's what's gonna happen. Well, in case you're worried about whether or not Josh is going to be okay, you can help us out. Go to ifanboy.com/support, where you can find all the various ways you can help to make sure Josh gets the attention he needs.
I need money.
The easiest and simplest way for you to help out iFanboy is just click on the link to go to Amazon for ifanboy.com/support and make any purchases on Amazon. You know you love Amazon. You buy all the stuff there. Everyone does. It's fantastic. It's the 21st century retail outlet. You click on that link, we get a little cut of your sales. You don't have to pay a cent. Amazon pays us.
They deliver on Sundays.
It's amazing.
I don't want them to. I tried to, they're like, this is coming on Sunday. I was like, oh, I don't want to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Try to move it around.
If you don't like Amazon and you want to help us out in a more direct way, you can sign up at ifanboy.com/support to become a member for $3 a month to $30 a year. We thank everybody who has done that. And or you can make a direct donation. Just say, hey, I want to throw $20 your way. Thanks for the entertainment. We try not to, you know, bug you guys that much, but, you know, we do, you know, got to pay for the servers and all that stuff. And so it does help. So ifanboy.com/support.
497 episodes. You know, what Ron has been doing? You people, I want to make this clear. Ron, the place where we hosted our video shows is going out of business. So Ron has gone back. How many are there? 380?
400. With the minis, it's like 400 and something.
He's moving all of the episodes that weren't on YouTube over to YouTube manually. So don't think that there's not, oh, they don't do the website and the video show anymore.
There's a lot going on.
There's stuff, man.
Yeah. It's crazy. Anyway, so thank you for everyone who supported us, and we thank everybody who's thinking about it and who pulls the trigger. So, all right. So we got a couple more to plow through here. This Damned Band, number one. What is this,
Josh? You know what this is?
No, I have no idea what it is.
This is Paul Cornell.
Okay.
Doing the first issue of a new series for Dark Horse.
Wow.
About a Spinal Tap-like rock band in the 70s.
Wow.
Who are sort of on their downward decline, better than Spinal Tap was,
okay,
who have been feigning worshiping the devil the whole time, and then at the end of the issue, they meet the devil.
Oh.
And he's like, yeah, you owe me.
Oh. That's interesting. That's a clever approach.
Yeah, yeah. He says he's his biggest fan, but the implied thing is there, that they've been playing it up, like, in the media all along, like, oh, yeah, you know, he's our Dark Lord and blah. Like, they played it fully out. And then, like, you see them literally, like, we're seeing it through a camera, like, you're like, as if you're watching documentary footage, you know?
Yeah.
And then the camera, like, drops and he's like, is that enough? Okay, good. I got to get back. You know, like, it's, they play to the public as if they really are Satan worshipers. But then they're not. And
That's a very clever premise.
Yeah. The personalities of the band are really interesting. It's the kind of book that, even if there wasn't the Satan thing, I would totally be like, I would read this.
Cool.
But it's a pretty good first issue. Right. I enjoyed it.
I will check that out.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. Right. If you know what? Dark Horse has been, we're going to talk about another one, but Dark Horse has been putting a few things together over there. Like, well, we're going to do Star Wars books. We got to do something.
Yeah, good for them. Well, of course they have to, yeah. So
you do something.
So in akin to Midnighter number 3, I also checked out Omega Men number 3.
Yeah.
Because that's another book I heard people talking about, and I dug that as well.
Yeah, I have actually been reading this all along, but I couldn't figure out A, kind of what was going on in the first two, or what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
But I'm sticking with it because it's definitely a thing going on here that I like.
Yeah, me too. I thought the art on this was really good as well.
This is from Tom King, and I'm waiting for it to open up again so I can tell you the artist. Bagenda? Bagend. It's a Hobbit thing. <Can't>.
It really doesn't take much to make us laugh.
Bagenda Overhill. Underhill. Damn it.
Cool.
I'm not sure how this relates to DC. I know that Kyle Rayner is in it for some reason, and there's Omega people, which is something to do with the fourth world Kirby's thing. Barnaby Bagenda.
That's fantastic.
That's a great name, but it's dwarfed by colorist Romulo Farjado Jr. Romulo.
These are great names. Wow.
Wow. The thing here that I like is that it's mostly, not most, a lot of this is split into 9-panel grids of fighting.
Okay.
It's like this, I think Tom King actually said something along the lines of it's like a Jim Steranko tribute on those sort of things. It's really fun storytelling throughout this whole thing, and the art's pretty fantastic. Colorist and layouts all put together. There's a nice little twist near the end of this thing that I'm really interested in. The scenes with Kyle Rayner are good because you're like, oh, I know him. Right. You know, and he's just hanging out, like, basically he's a prisoner and he's drawing. That's what he does.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I thought that was a nice callback to the character's previous history and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did you like it? You're good?
Yeah, I liked it. I'm on board. I'm totally on board. We're going to go back, read the first two. I'm going to stay with it. So
again, you know, interesting stuff at DC.
Yeah.
Make sure that we bring that up because we were fairly hard on them.
Yeah. So we kind of were. I wanted to bring up We Stand on Guard number 2 for one reason and one reason alone, and the amazing talents of Steve Scroach drawing large vehicles.
He is good at that.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Wow. Good stuff. Story wise, it doesn't.
I'm not there yet.
Not there yet. Nope. Yeah, I'm waiting for the BKV reveal. You know.
Yeah, it's super interesting in terms of an overall concept.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I haven't. It hasn't grabbed me yet.
Well, so. I mean, the thing is, like, what if present day America and Canada went to war?
Right.
Okay, that's really interesting, and America would totally run roughshod over them.
Yep.
Which is what happens. But, you know, they've, you know, indomitable spirit.
Yep.
And all that. So I do want to know where it goes. I'm not fully invested in it. I picked up Creepy. I think it's Creepy Quarterly, but I'm not sure. Creepy number 21 from Dark Horse this week. Because Jeff Parker was doing a short story in there with Sandy Jarrell. They did a graphic novel, Meteor Man, I think it was called, a little while back. I liked it. So this is just a short story. And Creepy, you may remember from the old days, basically.
Of course. Just, it's like EC, the old EC.
Yeah, little horror anthology.
Yeah.
And this is a black and white book.
Wow.
And there's three stories in it. One of them is this new Jeff Parker story, which was totally done in the vein of an old school creepy EC book. There's a one pager from Peter Bagg. And then there's who is it? Archie Goodwin, Gene Colan story from the 60s.
Okay.
1965 in here. This was super fun.
Cool.
I really enjoyed this sort of like old school anthology mixed in with, you know, some new stuff and some old stuff just done in black and white, super simple. You know, wouldn't want to read it all the time, but dipping into this kind of thing is really fun. Just to remember sort of what comics were, what comics can be, what the stuff you can do with them. It's really fun.
Cool. And a last minute ad. I wanted to highlight Savage Dragon number 205. Yes, Eric Larson is still doing it, but I love when there's little experiments or little play with the format goes on. And with this issue, he did a repetitive layout where he had a single vertical character speaking on the edge of the page, and then next to stacked five rectangle panels for the entire book. And I just like little exercises like that, like when you're challenging your storytelling, and it worked in a great way. Each character that got the full character shot was beginning the 2-page spread of the story at that point, you know, in a way that drew you in, and then you almost fall down the panels. Like it's interesting how it made your eye move on the page, and I just like little exercises like that, and it's fun that Larson is just having fun making comics that way. So
it's good that he didn't put the stacked panels on the left, because I would have to call foul.
Well, yes, of course. So. Anyway, so those are the books that we read and enjoyed this week. So good books of them all. On to the email, and this one is a heady email, and it's going to be a long read, so bear with us. But Connor actually thought it was worth discussing, and I was kind of curious what Josh's opinion would be. So that's why we're going to talk about it. All right, okay. you comfy, Josh? You ready for this?
Yeah, you're going to read this?
I'm going to read it.
All right, I will try not to zone out like I did when you talked about baseball.
Okay. Clint from Las Vegas writes in and says, I was perusing back issues at a con, and I came across a bundled package of Crossed Badlands. The owner had issues 1 through 40 for $30, so I picked it up. I usually enjoy Ennis and Burroughs as a great artist, but for some reason, this title never jumped out at me. I had a basic idea of the premise. People infected with a virus turns them into killers or zombies. People have to survive the apocalypse, etc., etc. I've been over the zombie craze for a while, but it was a good deal, and I figured I'd give it a shot. Wow, this book is an assault on the senses. I consider myself pretty open to a lot, but I was shocked by the content of this. The brutality, the gore, the rampant sexual assault on both men and women were more than my constitution could handle. I looked up the title to see where it's at, and they just released issue number 82. So there's obviously an audience that enjoys this. There are numerous examples of creators in all mediums using shocking images and topics to inspire conversation. Is this what Ennis is trying to do with these books? Is the Crossed virus an allegory for humanity's loss of innocence and overall hopelessness in society's ability to save itself? Do you feel that there is any level of content that is too far for comics, even with an adults-only rating? Does slapping an adults-only rating on the cover give the writer and artist carte blanche to publish anything they feel that will be purchased by the consumer? Are comics any different from any other medium since its origins were fundamentally rooted in targeting a younger audience? I'm not trying to start a conversation on constitutional law. I realize that creators have the right to make anything they want. I'm asking if you feel there's a line.
Okay. Okay, just first thing, right away, the plural of media, medium is media. Besides that, Okay, a couple of things. People listening home that... who listen to me know that Garth Ennis is, I'm going to go ahead and say, he's my favorite comic book writer. I think after all this time we've been doing this overall. So that being said, I don't read everything he's ever done. Never read this. I sort of got that it was going to be a thing that was not for me.
Right.
Which is totally part of a bit of a bias against Avatar, but only because historically I've never liked anything from Avatar I've ever read.
Right.
Regardless of who is doing it. I just have one issue that Warren Ellis did once. That's it. So that being said, I haven't read it, but I get the sense that it's like a Saw kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, like it's like a Saw, Walking Dead, a little post-apocalyptic. I mean, it's definitely. I've never read it either. I mean, it's one of those books that I'm aware of. I know I have friends who read it and love it. But it's definitely on the more shocking, depraved. Holy shit! I can't believe they did that. You know,
and I'm not. I don't like horror movies. I don't like that stuff. I stopped reading The Boys. I was like, this is too
much.
Yeah, it was. And I'm gonna go back and read that because I have a feeling it's there. I just didn't get to it.
Yeah.
Whatever it was I want out of something.
Because I feel like The Boys is up your alley because it's postmodern superhero deconstruction.
Yeah, but I've also had a lot of that.
You have, but you do like it, but you eat that up with a spoon.
Well, let's not. I mean, I did. I'm kind of like, okay, we solved that.
Yeah.
I think Joe Casey's sex book solved that.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally think that's like, okay, that's the last word.
That's actually a good thing. That's another sex is another book that has a lot of shock value in it.
There is a sense of humor to it.
Yeah.
It's very subtle, and I mean, I hate that we keep doing this. Like, I know Joe, and I can hear it. like that's his sense of humor. And if you've been a follower, not even just if you've been a follower of that guy's work for a long time, like it's perfect distillation of his comic book, his take on superheroes and comic books.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a different thing. So that's I think where we're both at with that. Now, we have to take it for the Eddie Murphy show. Sorry.
Why?
Because I watched it recently.
All right.
Funny. I just want to point out Eddie Murphy took down Bill Cosby 30 years ago.
Yep.
Not for that thing, but still. Oh, wow, that threw me off.
It really did.
I mean, the other question is, so is there a line? And no.
Yeah.
I am very much a libertarian when it comes to content. I think that I can only talk for the U.S. You know, we have freedom of speech. You can say anything. And in this one way, the market does kind of decide, or at least the public decides. And if, you know, what you say will make or break you.
Right.
And if it, unfortunately, the side effect of that is if what you have to say is awful, but everybody likes it, then that's what it is. And I think that's the cost of it. But I don't think there's a – I mean, there's a content line. Like, you shouldn't sell some stuff to kids or whatever, but –
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think there is a personal line that we all draw.
Yes.
That is tied in with our interest and our tolerance and whatever it is that makes us decide what we want to read and what we want to buy at the comic book store and all that sort of stuff. I think that there is a line legally when it comes to, selling to minors and all that sort of stuff. Like, don't package up an Archie looking like comic and have it be filled with anal sex. You know what I mean? Like graphic, you know, like nothing, there's nothing wrong with anal sex. I'm just saying with like graphic sexual imagery and then market it to kids like Joe Camel, like that sort of thing. That's
different. I mean, yeah. Okay. Child pornography. Okay. There's right. your line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Child pornography.
Leonard, I'm going to walk that, what I said back just a little bit. And go with child pornography is the line.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that in between all that, I feel as if creators, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we live in, I mean, why we love the country we live in and what we, well, I'll leave that alone. But I'm just saying, but like the freedom of speech and
he's going to walk that back.
I'm going to walk that back a little bit. I'm just saying that creators have the ability to say and do whatever they want, and I think that in the most recent years, with your sagas and your sex criminals and your and you know some of the stuff Rick's done in Deadly Class and things like that, you've seen a lot of boundaries being pushed in terms of sex, in terms of drugs, in terms of visualization. And the question for me always, the line where I draw is that does it serve the story or not?
Sure,
you know, yeah, like
it's almost like a rebirth of this is I think what people saw in the 60s.
Yes, yeah,
with the comics. With an X, you know, the underground scene, the your crumbs, your fabulous furry brothers, whatever it was called.
Yep.
You know, it's a lot like that. It's just that you're able to actually do that more of a mainstream thing now. And again, oddly enough, Alan Moore was kind of right. He was, you know, his Lost Girl stuff. He talked about this a lot, and that was sort of a precursor to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you're right. Like there has to be a story and a reason.
Right. And that said, I mean, like I said, you know, Cross isn't for me. I don't buy it. I don't particularly enjoy that kind of thing. I don't like the Saw movies either. I don't like torture porn and all that sort of stuff. But I have friends who love it. Mm-hmm. Who literally cannot wait, you know, like,
and they're not sociopaths,
right? Exactly. No, they're totally normal, cool people, you know. Like Tarot is another book that gets maligned. Jim Balance, very overly sexualized type thing. I've got friends who love that book who can't wait for it to come out. You know, that's awesome. I'm a fan of Dave Sim. That is someone who is gotten a lot of bad rap for some of the stuff he's done or written about or stuff like that. A lot of his stuff is I love it, and I'm in the minority there. But I have the ability to make that choice, and I'm glad that choice is there for us to make.
And,
you know,
and also never ever has there been a time where people are more accountable for their actions or missteps.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's for sure. So
not even allowed to make a mistake. So you know. Choose what you do pretty well, and you know if your audience finds you. But I don't know. Like I think it's totally fine. I'm totally uncomfortable with all of the things that you're talking about. And this is from a guy who I profess to be my favorite writer.
Yeah,
we're talking about Cross. So, there's you know the line is child pornography, but other than that, I'm sure there are other things.
Other than that, anything goes.
Yeah, but you know, like it has to. It has to. For me to want it, there has to have some value to it.
It has to serve the story. It has to serve a purpose. It has to serve, you know, like it has to be, I mean, for me, it's got to be compelling. And like the thing is, Crossed, Garth Ennis is one of the best writers. I'm sure it's written very well. I'm sure it's done in a way that is, you know, worthy of being published, but it's just not for me. The content is just not for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Garth Ennis isn't the type of person to do something just like, I don't get the sense that he's there giggling. Well, I don't know, but giggling over the fact like, oh, I can't believe they let me do this, you know?
I can't pin that guy down.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I can't do it, which I think is one of the things that I find so interesting about his work.
Yeah.
Like, it's so crass on one hand, which is what people who know him sort of on a surface level think, but there's always something else going on. Yeah. We were talking about Kev earlier. Kev is like, this is a whole undercurrent of a soldier who's trying to come to terms with his homophobia.
Oh, wow.
That's what Kev is about.
Wow.
And like who he is, and he was a professional killer, and he spends all this time with Midnighter, and he spends the whole time being a horrible homophobic prick to him, and very slowly, like over the course of years of this story, just being like, ah, I guess he's all right.
Interesting.
So I can't help but wonder if there's something in it, but maybe, you know, like, you know, Ennis, maybe he's just doing this as Grindhouse, as,
yeah,
you know, sensory overload, which, you know, is valid.
Yeah.
I suppose. Totally. I'm totally not going to read it though.
All right.
I'm not. There's no reason to.
Yeah. Well, great question though, and so we want to thank Clint from Vegas for writing in with that question. And if you've got questions like that, you'd like to hear us talk about, like to hear us wrestle with morality, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And in your email or voicemail, tell us who you are, where you're from, and for those voicemails, try to keep it to about 30 seconds. Cool. So. So another superhero movie came out.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. Fantastic Four hit theaters, and I gotta tell you, so I took one for the team. I went to go see it opening night. I had lined up a guest to talk to me about the movie, and I felt so bad after seeing it. I told that guest, "Listen, just don't even, just forget the whole thing, just forget it." Luckily enough, our good friend Jeff Cannata from We Have Concerns and a whole bunch of other great podcasts,
because he was going anyway,
he had already seen it. Like that was the thing. Like Jeff had already seen it. I'm like, okay, the damage had been done. So Jeff,
okay, let's just say, for example, that you say you had seen it Thursday afternoon.
Yep.
And I was all set to go out that night. Would you have called me?
No, because it would have been fun to talk. Yeah, I would have made you go. Yeah. Sorry. But anyway,
I don't want to take it away from the show for you. We'll have to talk about this later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But go back on the feed. You can hear me and Jeff Cannata talking about Fantastic Four and the utter train wreck that it was. Oh, man.
We're not going to be that show.
No. Yeah.
Who's like, no, here's the thing of value.
No, nothing of value. Oh, wow. And also coming up, we've got episode 500 is looming on the horizon, which is just crazy. And normally we celebrate the centennial episodes with a big to-do, but this time around we're not going to, because we're going to be busy that weekend. Instead, episode 501 is going to be a all live, all email episode. So if you want to get in on that episode, shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. Ask us anything. Make sure you put 501 in the subject line so we can flag it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll have more details probably next week or the week after about the live details of where you can tune into to check that out.
Oh, you would find those details at ifanboy.com. That's where they will show up. You can comment on this show. You can look for that stuff. You can go back and watch old video shows. Let's vintage, we'll call them. You can listen to previous audio podcasts. There's lots of say that you were wondering, like, oh boy, I really like their take on this horrible comic movie. What did they think about Jonah Hex, Ghost Rider, Punisher, the Wolverine movie?
They're all there.
What was the really bad one? Was it Punisher? Was that the worst one? I think Punisher was the one where I apologized.
Green Lantern.
Oh boy,
that was the worst one. And that's the thing, is that Fantastic Four I put in the same category as Green Lantern.
I think Green Lantern was bad because it was boring.
And that's why Fantastic Four was bad.
Interesting.
It was not bad. Like, it wasn't like Roger Corman bad, like bad mm-hmm. production values or anything like that. It was just so mediocre and so uninspired.
Yeah, that's hard to even talk about.
Yeah, that's
because with Punisher you could be like, what the fuck was that?
I mean, and Ghost Rider was like there was some batshit crazy stuff in it. Like, give me bad crazy over bad boring. That's what I, you
sure.
know. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I don't want either, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You can also follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy and twitter.com/iFanboy, where you can see what the pick of the week is, for example, before the show comes out. Or you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, CSGO Patrick, and Ron XO.
Yes. And if you like what we're doing, please, by all means, go to iTunes and write a review or any other podcast. There's have you realized there's a bunch of other podcast things out there that people absorb the shows with?
Like apparently, there was a problem on one of them this week, yeah. And I was like, "Ron, do we have anything to do with this?" And like, I don't know.
No, I said I knew. I took care of it, but that was actually my fault. Sorry. But anyway, write a review about us wherever you can. Tell everyone, spread the word about iFanboy. We appreciate everybody who lets other folks know about us.
Did you verify the feed?
I did verify the feed. I did. I just had the wrong date in it. That's what it was. So, but it verified still. So,
oh, that's not your fault. That's the verification fault.
Well, we'll get into it later. But anyway, but
we should do it now. Everyone should have to hear. You know what? If you're going to be held accountable, no.
No, but we appreciate everybody. It's amazing that nearly 10 years into doing this, our numbers keep going up every week, which is just crazy. So,
Walking Dead of podcasts.
We want to thank everybody. So that's it. So, Josh, we survived the two-man show. I think we did all right.
I feel like that comment was just for the old around comics guys.
Yeah, it was.
Just, who aren't like, not bragging to anybody. You're just like, oh, by the way.
Nope. And they're not listening, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, they're definitely not listening. No one. I have this thing where I'm like, I don't. I haven't been out for a while. Like a few years. So like, I know that there are some people who are still around, but I know like there are a bunch of pros who would listen and whatever. And I've just assumed everybody stopped.
Yeah, that's what I assumed too. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, we heard what you had to say.
Yeah. Although since I've returned to the show, I've had pros contact me thanking me for kind words. So some are still listening. So,
Well, they have a lot of free time.
True, yeah.
Not free time, but they're drawing and shit.
Well, yeah, exactly. Background kind of thing. Yeah. So
I mean, obviously, we know those of you who have been around. But there are even people who are like, I don't know, other than being fans of the show.
Right.
And I know them on Twitter and Facebook or whatever, and I assume they've stopped listening to you.
Yeah, like, me too.
I don't want to assume that.
Yep.
Like, guy I've known for 10 years, like, no, I don't expect.
Listen, if you're still listening to the show, let Josh know. Send him a tweet. Let him know you're still listening. All right. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. I think you're listening. You are floating between two ends that don't matter.